And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this week, finally, Joe Biden, president of these United States, had a press conference. Now, that seemed to merit a lot of attention on the part of reporters, and they compared it to how long it took Trump to have a press conference, how long it took Obama to have. I really don't see that it matters. I don't think anybody was complaining that Biden was hiding what he was doing or that it was impossible to know what his point of view was. But in any case, he had a press conference. Did you listen to it?
Oh, well, I heard parts of it. I didn't listen to it live. But, you know, this was typical inside the Beltway stuff, where the press cared more about whether or not they were going to have a press conference than the American public cared about. And then when the press got its opportunity, they took a lot of heat because there were things they never asked.
They didn't ask anything about the pandemic.
Right. And that is the number one thing that the Biden administration has been concentrating on.
Yeah. And rightly so. That's why he won the election.
And that was his promise. That was his promise, that he would. That was the first thing he was going to tackle. They also,
and the revival of the economy is completely dependent upon getting the pandemic out of the way.
Right, and I don't think they asked him anything about infrastructure either, which was the next thing he was going to. He said he was going to tackle on this.
Now, why is that? Do you think that that's an executive decision by the editors and the publishers? Or do you think that all the reporters all of a sudden, for some reason, decided to pitch the news that way?
I think that they talk to each other. And
Who talks to each other?
The reporters. The Washington Press Corps. They all know each other. They're all pally-pally. The only ones that may not talk to them are the Fox News, OAN, Newsmax people. And if you notice, Fox News was complaining they didn't get to ask a question. But too bad. You know, Biden had said,
I don't think it's the reporters. I'll tell you the truth. I was a reporter.
Okay.
And in my experience on just a couple of papers where I worked, I never was the guy who decided how a story would be pitched. My editor would call me over and say, go over there, get that story, look at it from this angle. That's what I was told to do. It could have been any angle, but he told, whatever the angle was, he told me, it was never a she, he told me what the angle was. That's what I did. If I did something else, he rewrote the story.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's the reporters. I think that it's not the tactics that decide the strategy. It's the strategy that decides the tactics. And that goes for the way newspapers and television and radio works. The people who control them decide what they want to cover, how they want to cover it, and it's the job of the reporters to do it. It's just like it's not the auto worker's decision what the car is going to look like. He just has to put together whatever the pattern is.
Well, we're going to have to follow this line and see what happened. Don't forget, Biden had given a number of private interviews to certain, you know, George Stephanopoulos for one. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he was hiding or he didn't talk about certain things. And I think also what happened was that between them scheduling the news conference, which was done right about the time that the COVID relief bill passed, and the time of the press conference, you had other stories emerge, particularly stuff about what was happening down at the border. And, of course, that had a little bit of a sexier appeal to it because, A, it was newer, B, it involved people. COVID was an old story all of a sudden. You know, here you had kids and you had this underlying theme that's, you know, I mean, it was the Donald Trump theme, and that was something that the Democrats were yelling about in terms of the press too. That they pick up on Republican talking points too much.
Well, that's the point. The media is controlled by Republicans. That's the fact. And the stories that they run are slanted to highlight the Republican point of view.
Well, you know, that I think I mentioned last week or the week before, there was that dissenting opinion in a case in the D.C. Circuit that Judge Silberman wrote.
Yeah.
And he went off on what he called the liberal press, and he didn't talk about the ownership as much. And then he pointed to it, he said, except for like the Wall Street Journal and Fox News, which he noted were controlled by one family, the Murdochs.
Yeah.
There you go there in terms of who's really running things and the extent of it. You know, certainly when you have one family controlling the what the right wing talks about, I think that that's a danger to democracy. And, there have been certain things that have happened over the years that have expanded the Murdoch empire. I mean, first of all, there was a time when he couldn't buy TV stations because he wasn't a citizen of the United States. And then there was the issue of whether or not you could control both a newspaper and a television station in the same media market. I'm getting a little bit into the weeds, but that was stuff that was big in the 1980s.
Well, you could go back to the 20th century when the Pattisons and the Hearsts controlled dozens of newspapers throughout the country, both extremely right-wing, pro-war, pro-American imperialist families with their papers had that point of view and pitched their coverage to the working class and developed an enormous, you know, pro-fascist, working-class-based public opinion. And that went on through most of the 20th century before the, you know, before the rise of television.
Yeah, well, they blame Hearst, some historians do, for starting the war of the Spanish-American War.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Of course, then the Hearst people say, well, look what we got out of it. We got Cuba, we got the Philippines, things worked out well for the Americans, whatever. But it was still a war that was
not only
up.
Was it a war, but in the Philippines, it produced some of the most horrendous torture that the American government has ever been guilty of. Enough so that Mark Twain founded the Anti-Imperialist League in opposition to the Spanish-American War.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned fascist. There was a comment. I don't generally watch Tucker Carlson. I have people I'm acquainted with that do, and they're always sending me stuff. But it was interesting. On Thursday night, he had a guest on, some guy named Kelly. I don't know who he was, who made the comment that within 10 to 20 years, the right is going to nominate a fascist for president. And Carlson readily agreed with him. Of course, my thought is, I think we already had that.
Yeah, didn't we have Trump?
Yeah, yeah.
That is a fascist. That's what they look like.
Yeah.
He happened to be an incompetent fascist. He could have been a competent fascist.
Yeah, but we want to discuss a little bit more about this in terms of the media. We had some pretty stunning developments in the media this week, or we've had them over time, and it was brought out by litigation. We went through this post-election big lie that the election was rigged, and as part of that scheme to convince Americans that it was, we had these characters emerge, like Sidney Powell, a lawyer who once had a fairly decent reputation, who made all of these outlandish claims and suggestions about how the Dominion voting machines of Smartmatic and were tied in with Hugo Chavez, who's been dead for what, 7 or 9 or 10 years, and all of this stuff, which went nowhere in the courts. And this week's,
when you say nowhere, let's remind people, 60 court cases in 30 states she lost every one.
Right.
And she lost it always because the court said, you haven't presented any evidence.
Right. And her buddy, Rudy Giuliani, at one time, was doing the same thing. He actually went into court, and we've heard the audio in Pennsylvania, where he told the federal judge, this is not a case of fraud.
Right.
He even admitted he didn't have fraud. But
because if he claimed it was fraud, he would have been violating the rules of procedure in the court.
Yeah, Rule 11, which says that an attorney is responsible for the pleadings that they make, subject to sanction. Now, it hasn't stopped certain bar associations from looking into his fitness to be a lawyer in those jurisdictions. But in any event, they came up short in any sort of proof. But what they got is what they wanted, was all of this hype that was pumped up by the right-wing state, the Murdoch stations, and other places like Newsmax and OAN and things like that. Well, this week, or a couple of weeks ago, Sidney Powell got sued by Dominion Voting Systems. And lo and behold, this week her lawyers answered. Now, it wasn't sufficient for her to already have shown that she couldn't win in court to support her things. Now her lawyers come into court when she's the defendant and say no reasonable person could believe what she was saying were facts. That all
it's worth repeating that. Her defense is, no reasonable person would believe me, therefore I can't be guilty of defaming this company.
Right. That all I was trying to do was bring attention to things for the court to flesh out. Now, she didn't come up with this defense alone. This was a defense a lot of people don't remember, but 6 months ago, Karen McDougal had sued Tucker Carlson for things that he said about her, and she sued him for defamation. She was one of Donald Trump's mistresses that was covered up by Michael Cohen and the Inquirer and things like that. And in defense of Tucker Carlson, the Fox News attorneys went to court and said essentially the same thing, that Tucker Carlson doesn't deal in facts, he deals in opinion, and it should have been apparent to his listening audience or viewing audience that that's what he does.
And he doesn't tell the truth, he just says what he thinks.
Right. Right.
And he doesn't claim to tell the truth.
Right. And it worked in that case, having to do with what a public figure was and stuff like that. But it's probably not going to work for Sidney Powell. Now, of course, Fox News is back in the soup because Dominion has sued Fox News. And they went through the whole list of people on Fox News that have perpetuated the lies about their system, Lou Dobbs, Jeanine Pirro, Sean Hannity, the whole crew there, Laura Ingraham. And it's going to be interesting how Fox News handles that. Are they going to come back in and say, nobody could believe us because we don't deal in fact? Or are they going to come up with some other thing? Now, Fox has a reputation for trying to settle cases before they get to the discovery phase. Whether Dominion would be willing to settle before that is, I think, problematical. I think they're out for more blood. I think that they're out to really, really undermine Fox. And what we're going to see is videotapes of depositions that Fox is going to try to quash or tell the court it can't be shown, of Dominion asking them, well, what's your evidence? You said this. What information did you have? And by the way, how come all of your people are saying this? What is your internal communications about bringing this stuff up? Are you going for ratings? Was that the purpose of things? And so that's going to be pretty interesting. And where, you know, this conspiracy-minded public, where they go if Fox News is undermined. You know, they after the election, they tended to drift away from Fox towards Newsmax and OAN, and now they're drifting back because Fox News is again getting more and more right-wingish again or pro-Trumpish again, and we'll see what happens. As a matter of fact, this week they had a press conference, or not a press conference, but a call-in by Donald Trump, in which he lied again and again and again about the election, about the insurrection, saying, oh, there were hugs and kisses. I mean, those were his essential words. There was, you know, he didn't talk about, and the host never mentioned, well, what about those people carrying Trump flags that they were using to beat the cops over their heads? You know, we'll see how the right-wing media fares under these circumstances.
This week also, there were hearings of the top tech executives, the yes. Facebook executives, the Google executives, in which the Congress was asking them questions about how they control the news. Because, let's face it, everybody knows, no matter how many newspapers there may be in the country, most Americans are watching Facebook, and that's where they're getting their news from. So what is Facebook doing, and how can they level the playing field in a situation where it appears that all of 20 individuals are responsible for most of the anti-vaccine information that appears throughout the world and that tens of millions of people are listening to? 20 yeah. people.
Yeah.
And this is all because of Facebook's algorithms.
Yes. And Twitter's algorithms yeah. and those things. And there was an interesting article I read this weekend where, you know, these people that are prone to believe in conspiracies, they migrate from one conspiracy to another. You know, the election fraud conspiracy. First of all, that the virus was a hoax, that conspiracy. And then the election fraud conspiracy. And now they're going into the anti-vax conspiracy, which isn't all right wing. I mean, you have somebody like Bobby Kennedy Jr., who's one of the prime spokespeople for the anti-vax movement. We're seeing that. But
he is the preeminent spokesperson yeah. for the anti-vax yes. movement. He has tens of millions of people who follow him.
Yeah. And he's been chastised by his family over that. But you mentioned that they had the Facebooks in, and part of this is at the beginning, Congress essentially immunized these tech companies by saying that they couldn't be sued for their content because they didn't originate their content. They weren't publishers like newspapers. The movement now is in the opposite direction, to consider them publishers. A year or so ago, Sacha Baron Cohen, Borat, gave a strong speech to the Anti-Defamation League, saying that these folks should be held accountable and should be suable in this because they are responsible for the rise in hate crimes, in anti-Semitism, and now, of course, we see anti-Asian hate coming through, as well as racism, of course.
So, and by the way, they are culpable. Interestingly enough, there's a fellow named Kyle Kulinski who has a YouTube channel, and he has several million followers on his YouTube channel. In this week, his show highlighted the fact that since the election, his show, And he gave the results of 20 other left-wing or left-leaning YouTube channels have suddenly found that the algorithms on YouTube are such that their show is no longer comes up when you search for left-wing news or his show or anything like that. You know, you search on Kyle Kulinski, he comes up, and then to your right, you have a whole panel of similar shows. Well, none of these shows have come up. And in his case, he said he has his old audience, but his new signups have declined by 90%. He says, I could understand 10%. I could understand 20%. People are no longer interested to a certain extent in politics. You'd have a 20% fall off. 90%? And he showed that in every case, each one of these left-wing shows has new signups have declined by between 75% and 90% in the last couple of months. So, for Facebook people to say, executives to say, they got nothing to do with it. It turns out they have everything to do with it.
Yeah. You know, this week we had something else that really goes to democracy itself. Not necessarily the media, but democracy. And that is, we've talked before that the Republican Party has sustained itself through gimmicks and, in effect, rigging a minority rule situation in the states and across the country, both local and national, and that there were over 250 bills after the last election based in 43 states, including ours here in Pennsylvania, to make voting harder after what happened to Donald Trump, so to speak, his insistence that he had 75 million votes and therefore he won the election and don't count anybody else's votes. And finally, one of the first bills not only got passed, but got signed in Georgia this week. And it's interesting that it was in Georgia, because in Georgia you had what we used to call regular Republicans, not Trumpist Republicans. They were pro-Trump, but not the way that we saw this heavy right-wing conspiracy wing go. And that election, those officials held up under tremendous pressure from Donald Trump, which, by the way, is being investigated by the Attorney General of the state, they held up and said, no, our election, we examined it, we went over it two or three times, and that it was fair and the outcome was real.
They went over it, they had three separate counts, including a hand count.
Yes, a hand count. And and they were the ones that leaked the audio tape of Donald Trump trying to force the Secretary of State to change the outcome. And despite this, and despite the fact that Georgia had more people vote than they'd ever had or close to ever having, and people using all of the methods like drop boxes and mail-in ballots and what have you, they passed this fairly draconian law that would limit voting, particularly aimed at the minority communities in the bigger cities. First they were going to go after Sunday voting, where black churches vote, from souls to the polls was the theme. They pulled that. They didn't put that in, although the senator from Mississippi had some comments about voting on Sunday and why it shouldn't be done, trying to quote the Bible, remember the Sabbath.
She quoted Exodus, right? Something in Exodus?
Well, she quoted, the first Ten Commandments, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. At which point, Chuck Schumer, who's Jewish, noted to her that the Sabbath day in the Bible is Saturday, not Sunday. Someone else pointed out that she was sworn into office on Sunday, and I think others could probably mention the fact that you could buy assault rifles on a Sunday. Why can't you vote? But getting back to Georgia,
because the Bible says vengeance is mine. It doesn't say voting is mine.
Yeah, well, but yeah, but that's the Lord. It's not the person.
Well, that's true.
Details, minor details.
Right.
On the other hand, Georgia then is taking away drop boxes, which the media was quick to show Governor Kemp using a drop box. And by the way, Kemp signed this bill in a closed chamber, his closed chamber, surrounded by only white men, in front of a painting of a Georgia plantation that had once held 100 slaves. So there was one Georgia state, a black legislator, who knocked on his door and said, I want to see this signing, and they wound up arresting her.
Well, I think that's completely appropriate, because Kemp, one of those regular Republicans that you mentioned at the beginning of this point,
yeah.
Kemp is the fellow who administered the vote for the governorship at the same time that he was the candidate. Now, in Pennsylvania, in every county, there's an election commission, and the election commission members are simultaneously the county commissioners. So when the county commission comes up for re-election, they can't be on the election commission, and the law says exactly who's supposed to replace them when they get up for re-election. But in Georgia, you can run for office and be in charge of administering the election at the same time. Kemp knocked out 500,000 potential voters from that election, and he himself won the election by, what, 38,000 votes?
Something like that. He was the Secretary of State at the time, and he used the Chris Kobach method. Chris Kobach being the one guy. Remember, Kobach, Trump put him in charge of a commission to show how much fraud occurred in the previous election and why Trump didn't lose by 3 million votes, and the commission quickly disbanded because they couldn't show any fraud.
Right.
Kemp, you talk about Kemp. Now, there's one of the interesting provisions in the Georgia bill is, now that we've made it so that people will have to wait more in line because they won't have as much early voting and they won't have drop boxes, now that we're going to extend the lines and people are going to have to wait longer in lines, we are now making it illegal for anybody to give people food or drink in line, which is, I think one step too far. I would point out in the state of Georgia that one of its largest companies, if not the largest, is a company known as Coca-Cola. So I would be quick to say that the Georgia legislature says people can't drink Coke and vote at the same time. but they are pointing out the fact that they want companies to step up. So far, none of them really have. They've given these statements, but that they really need to have corporations. Delta is down there, and there are others, because in other states that has worked. In Indiana, remember where Mike Pence was going to sign a bill, the NCAA says, we're not coming to Indianapolis. And in North Carolina, they were going to sign an anti-gay legislation, I believe. And companies said, well, we're not coming, or we're not going to support this. In Georgia, they're supposed to have sporting events. I don't think it's the Super Bowl. I think it's the All-Star Game. It'd be interesting if Major League Baseball, if the blacks in Major League Baseball said, we're not going to play in an All-Star Game if you're going to have it in Georgia, would they have this law? The people can have certain things in their own hands, like the NBAers did.
Well, and that brings up the point of what is bipartisan? Yeah. Is bipartisan only how the representatives of the various parties in Congress get along with each other? Or is bipartisan how the people in the country feel? If bipartisan is how the people in the country feel, so far the Biden relief bill is an enormous bipartisan success, because it turns out that 82% of the country supports this bill.
And Biden, that's what the Biden team has been emphasizing. They say, we are bipartisan because we represent people of all stripes, and we're not the Republicans in Congress who only represent themselves. And it's working. Biden's approval ratings have been consistently around 60%. Mm-hmm. And on this, and on the COVID, they're even higher.
And among young voters who support the Republicans, 82% support this bill.
Yeah. Well, which bodes well for the future.
Yeah, it certainly does.
The right wing is older white men. So
we're done for this week. We'll see what's coming up next week. A lot will be coming up.
Yeah, we'll be eating matzahs. So have a happy Passover.
Have a happy matzah pie.
Okay. See you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps. Members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.